Great. So I'm Anna Shank. I am on faculty at UNC Gilling School of Global Public Health, and I am Associate Dean for Practice, and I chair the Scientific Advisory Committee. I have a disclosure. The United Health Foundation does have a contract with UNC. It includes a portion of my time and a graduate research assistant to support the Scientific Advisory Committee. I'm going to talk very briefly about three things. I'm going to give a little bit of background about the Scientific Advisory Committee, the types of modifications that the committee suggests, and then I'm going to walk through an example, sort of in the life of a suggested modification and how it was handled. So as Tom mentioned, the Scientific Advisory Committee was implemented in 2002, and you saw the icons of the different schools represented on that last slide that he just put up. I've got a slide that does have all the names. It's a large committee. It's kind of difficult to read all the names, but I wanted you to see the breadth of expertise that we have on this committee. Initially, the committee was chaired by Tom Ricketts, who is also on faculty at UNC, and I began chairing it 2 years ago. The committee meets annually. We meet in the spring to talk about the index, where public health has come in the past year, if there are any areas of public health or measurement that we need to focus on for the following year. And we also are charged with maintaining the comparative information across the years. So this is a list of the members of the 2011 Scientific Advisory Committee, and you can see that we do have public health experts, experts in measurement, experts in financing from a number of leading schools of public health and other universities. As I looked back over the past 10 years and what the Scientific Advisory Committee had recommended, I could group them into four different types of changes. One involved changes in the model, and I'll talk a little bit about that, changes in the measures themselves, changes in the methodology, and then changes in the weighting or relative importance of different components of the model. So I'm not going to walk through this on the year by year, but I wanted you to kind of understand what's been happening. So you know that I actually didn't know it started in 88, but it started in 88 or now 90, which is what most people say. Initially, there were 17 components, and they were listed and categorized into five categories of lifestyle, access, disability, disease, and mortality, but they didn't have a cohesive model that helped with the messaging in terms of how these things were related. So when the Scientific Advisory Committee came on board in 2002, they said, let's group these into determinants and outcomes, because the determinants are the more actionable part, and that's really what we want people to focus on. And then in 2004, they expanded this model and said, you know what, we need to further categorize the determinants into personal behaviors, health policies, community and environment, and then health outcomes. And then in 2006, they added another component to the model, which is in recognition of the importance of clinical care. So basically, we've kept that same model since 2006, although the number of components of the model have changed. So now we have 23 components in the 2011 model. So this is just a visual of sort of where the model has been. In 2004, you can see there were those three categories, health policies, behaviors, and environment, and then how they related to the health outcomes. In 2005, there was recognition of clinical care being important, so they redesigned the model, but it wasn't components for clinical care weren't added until the following year, which you can see for the 2006 model. And basically, the model that we have now is the same, but it's a different illustration of that model that shows that all four of those social determinants, categories of social determinants of health, are related to each other and are all influencing health outcomes. I stole this slide from Tom's slide deck. This is just a reminder of what we mean when we say the different categories of determinants and the different outcomes. So one of the things that, a second thing they do is advise on selection of measures. So in doing that, there are four criteria that they keep in mind. One is that as a group, the measures need to represent the broad range of factors that influence health. This is not a single disease or single entity index, so it's supposed to cover the broad spectrum of health. The individual components themselves must use a common health measurement standard. The data have to be available at the state level, and they need to be updated periodically. We do have some things that aren't updated annually, but we do like that they're updated at least every other year so that there's some chance for improvement for the states. So looking at the changes in the measures, there are reasons why the committee might recommend a change. One is that health conditions have changed. A second might be related to data issues, which was alluded earlier, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. And then third would be related to characteristics of the measure itself, and I've got some examples of each of these. So in terms of changing health priorities, when the measure was first put out, there was a combination indicator called heart disease risk, which included information from the behavioral risk factor survey that had obesity, but it was included with blood pressure and cholesterol, I think, high cholesterol. They starting in 2004, the Scientific Advisory Committee suggested, you know, you really need to hone in on obesity. Pull it out from that measure. Let's talk about obesity as an individual determinant. In 2007, they added primary care physicians and preventable hospitalizations to capture some of the clinical indicators of care. And then in 2008, they moved to add some environmental indicators with the health pollution measure. And a geographic disparity measure, trying to get at the disparities issue. And then in last year, we added diabetes. It had been a measure we reported on, but it hadn't been included in the calculation of the index, but it was as of last year. And then the infectious disease measure was modified, again, reflecting different priorities over time. So a second reason that a measure might be changed is that the data just aren't available. And this is the one that Tom alluded to a while ago. The birth certificate changed over time. So we used to use a measure of adequacy of prenatal care, which was on the birth certificates. It was calculated using, I think, initially the Kessner Index and then the Cottlechuck Index. But as states changed their birth certificates, this was no longer available. And so we moved last year, or maybe 2 years ago, I think it was, to change that measure to early prenatal care, which is still something that can be gathered off the birth certificates. And that's the percent of pregnant women who receive care in their first trimester. So another reason why measures may change is that the committee identifies a more reliable source of data or a more reliable indicator for that underlying construct. And here are some examples of when that has happened. So initially, unemployment was in the index, and the Scientific Advisory Committee said, you know, we think percent of children in poverty better captures what we're interested in. Cancer cases was initially in the index, and the Scientific Advisory Committee said, you know, because of the variation in cancer registries, we really think we want to use cancer deaths as an indicator rather than cancer cases. So this is just examples of when they're sort of fine-tuning, they're keeping the same construct, but trying to get a better measure of that construct. And then here's another example of one that's been sort of like the search for the Holy Grail. Everybody knows that funding of public health programs is a very important determinant of how successful those programs are. And this measure has changed four times over the year as the committee has wrestled with where's the best data source, how can we measure the state's input into their public health programs. Currently, what we're using is state funding that's dedicated to public health, as well as a measure of federal funding that comes through CDC or HRSA. So a third thing that the Scientific Advisory Committee recommends changes on are the methodology. So in 2009, there was a shift in the methodology. Prior to that, the state scores had been based on the distance from the average or the national mean. And that made it very difficult to compare across measures that had different underlying distributions and that had different characteristics of the measure themselves. And so with the use of the Z-score, it enabled those comparisons across measures and across states. And then finally, changes in the weights. When there's some underlying considerations for changes in the weights, they're listed right here, and there's three of them. The first thing that we consider is what the effect of that particular component has on overall health. So how important is that measure to overall health? And then secondly, we look at to what extent does the effect of that measure on health, is that how much of it is captured in that single measure versus being included in other measures as well. And then finally, we consider the reliability of the data supporting that component. And so this is just, briefly to show you, Tom alluded to this, over time there's been a shift to move the weight of the index towards the determinants. And so I took a snapshot of 2004 to show you that the outcomes were almost half of the weight back in 2004 in the earlier days. Now the weight has been shifted so that the outcomes are less because the states can do less about those in a yearly basis and there's more weight put on the determinants. Okay, so I just want to briefly show you the example, and I'm going to use food deserts. So in 2011, the advisory committee suggested exploring the inclusion of information about access to healthy food in communities. So three potential measures were examined. Data were gathered for each measure, and then rankings were calculated using each measure to assess the effect of that measure on the state ranking. So these are the three potential measures of that we looked at. The county health rankings, which uses the percent of zip codes in a county with a grocery store or a farmer's market. The CDC Children's Food Environment State Indicator Report has a measure of this as well, which is the percentage of food retailers in the census tract that are healthy. And then finally, the USDA has an indicator as well, which is the percentage of low-income census tracts where a third of the residents have low access to a grocery store. And that low access is defined for urban as being within a mile or for rural areas as being within 10 miles. And they say a picture's worth a thousand words. I just threw this up there. This is just two of those two measures to show the lack of a correlation between the two. And if you any two comparisons you would pick, this is what you would get. The rankings did change substantially for each state, depending upon which of these indicators was tried in the model. And all these data were shared with the Scientific Advisory Committee. And this is just a snippet of some of the comments that the committee made. So an example, the existing measures seem to be quite noisy. this is a problem that needs a bit more work. Or it raises a number of questions, such as validity, interpretation, etc. So for this measure, it was decided that it was not time to include this measure in the index. That doesn't mean the Scientific Advisory Committee will let it go. We may be sent right back to the drawing board again to continue to wrestle with this, but at this time the committee decided not to put it in there. So just finally, we talked about maintaining continuity in the ranking. So with all these changes, how can you compare from year to year to year? Well, one thing that's beautiful about the way this ranking has been done is that anytime a measure or a model or a weight is changed, then the previous rankings are recalculated. So there's always a way to look backwards over time and assess your progress. That's historically been true. We are facing some current challenges, and Tom alluded to this. The Behavioral Risk Factor Survey has changed their call methodology substantially, and it has caused some dramatic shifts in six of the variables that we use Actually, there's six that are listed here. This is going to cause some challenges moving forward in terms of that our ability to back calculate and do the trend analysis. So finally, I just wanted to close by saying that the measurement of these components is important, but it's quite challenging, as you can see, sort of the gyrations we've gone through over the years, but that this is a work in progress. So refinement and continuous quality improvement are built into the index, and they're part of what America's Health Rankings is all about. The ultimate purpose is to stimulate action at the state level, and the states are using this. You'll hear an example of this later, but all of the states are, as an aggregate, are making progress in improving their scores. So, thank you. I have my contact information if anybody wants to write that down.